The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of We the People Radio. You're here with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Okay, Mark, you were on the first half. Now you have to say who you are.
My name is Mark Spanagle. Work in Republican politics.
We're talking about all the stuff that is the big, deep secret of... It shouldn't be a secret, but I guess it is. Did we learn this in school?
Yes, you learn this in school.
God, I don't remember learning any of this in school.
Well, you don't learn about party politics in school, because that's something that is really... the behind the scenes
like
of
the
how
weeds.
Does the nomination actually happen? It's definitely the weeds, because, you know, who knows that there's 2,443 possible delegates to become the Republican nominee.
Yeah, no one.
You don't need to know that. You just need to know, he won out Iowa and New Hampshire.
But
he's got the momentum.
We get, like, bludgeoned by this stuff all day, every day, and I think it's kind of fun to know how it's going behind the scenes. So let's see. You can catch us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll put up as much information. Right now I have two websites to add to this show. I really need to come up with some more information. This is just a ton of stuff that we don't typically talk about.
Well, I think people learned about this in school, but as time goes on, you don't stay on top of it. You forget a lot of it. And now I think more and more people are becoming involved in politics and need a little refresher course.
Well, that's why I thought this was important for 2016, because I think people are paying attention
like they never have.
In order to become involved, you have to know how it works. You have to know how to do that. So if you didn't listen to the first half, you should go back and do that, because that was kind of all about the campaign side of things. Now we're into the actual voting side of things. So how does the nominee become the nominee? And, I don't know, all that good stuff. So, all right, back to where we were. We were talking about Iowa. So Iowa became first after 1968.
After 68. 72 was the first year it became first, and that was because for the first time, we had set rules that you had to publish. Mm-hmm. And because Iowa has such a long, complicated process, because you have local, county, congressional, and state different conventions that you have to go through. Those all take time, and there's 30 days between each one. They had to be first to make it in the calendar.
In order to fit, so they could be done in time. So when we talk about the parties set the rules, so I guess is this why, like, third parties never really get anywhere? Because they just don't have the machinery?
They don't have the bandwidth. The people signed up with them to do it. Essentially, it takes, if you're a third party, if you're others... you need signatures. You need to qualify. The other national parties, the Republicans and Democrats, don't necessarily require it, because they have all that machinery and the people and the registration.
Yeah, everything's already in place.
It's already in place. They kind of automatically qualify.
Okay.
If you're running for Bob's Big Boy Party nomination,
you don't have enough guys.
You got to get enough guys. You got to have signatures, and it takes a lot of signatures. That's why right now, you know, there's the news story about Michael Bloomberg talking about he's thinking about running as an independent for president to challenge Hillary and whoever the Republican nominee is. In order for him to do that, like Ross Perot, he has to get on the ballot in every state. Yeah, he doesn't have to get nominated, but he has to get enough signatures in every single state to get put on the ballot. And some states make it really hard for non-party, non-Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, Green Party.
And how many signatures do they need?
Probably depends on
just
the state.
Just depends on the state?
Depends on the state. Some are percentage of – California is usually a percentage of how many people participated in the last election. Mm. So, like, an initiative here in California, you need 400,000 signatures, valid signatures, to get on the ballot. I believe for California, it's similar to that to run as an independent.
Dang. Mm. So if you don't have a lot of people helping you...
or a lot of money.
Or a ton of money, you're kind of hosed. Okay, so we talk about how the party makes all these rules and stuff. So start from the kind of, like, bottom up. How do you get to be the chairman of a party? Like, what's the food chain look like?
All parties start as local. You have a local county or local regional, what we in California call a central committee. You're an elected body in California. Other places, not so much. You could caucus, you could join, whatever. If you want to be a member of your local Republican Central Committee, you go down to the elections office and say, hey, I want to be on the Republican Party. They can, when it's time to file, they give you the form, you file, you run like every day. A lot of times, not enough people runs, it never makes it to the ballot, you're automatically it. And then they fill the committee. And that committee, made up of local people in your local county, then elect a chairman. And they elect delegates to the state party convention.
And does each... If there's one per, does it matter what state you're in if there's one per county?
No, there's one per county.
Okay. So you have one committee per county, and they all send the same number of people to their state convention?
Nope, based on population.
Okay.
Usually. Every state gets to decide their own.
Okay.
Most states, it's based on population. More populous areas with more of that party registrant gets more representation.
Oh, and that makes sense. I mean, some of these counties you got, you know,
they have, 7,000 people in Monona County or something? Yeah.
Yeah. And more, you know, some state parties give bonus delegates to people who are more active. Let's say your county party has a headquarters, makes 10,000 phone calls. Everybody that's elected there is a Republican. They might give you more delegates because you're active and you're doing things.
Oh, interesting.
Versus a county that has a bunch of Republicans but doesn't have any elections and never makes it to the ballot, you're automatically it. And then they fill the committee. And that committee, made up of local people in your local county, then elect a chairman. And they elect delegates to the state party convention.
And does each, if there's one per, does it matter what state you're in if there's one per county?
No, there's one per county.
Okay. So you have one committee per county, and they all send the same number of people to their state convention?
Nope, based on population.
Okay.
Usually. Every state gets to decide their own.
Okay.
Most states, it's based on population. More populous areas with more of that party registrant gets more representation.
Oh, and that makes sense. I mean, some of these counties, you got, you know...
They have, 7,000 people in Monona County or something? Yeah.
Yeah. And more, you know, some state parties give bonus delegates to people who are more active. Let's say your county party has a headquarters, makes 10,000 phone calls. Everybody that's elected there is a Republican. They might give you more delegates because you're active and you're doing things.
Oh, interesting.
Versus a county that has a bunch of Republicans but doesn't have any elected Republicans to anything. You might get penalized because you're not producing anything.
Right.
Then those people go to the state convention and they elect a state party chairman. Now, there's a state party chairman, a national committee woman, and a national committee man from each state, and that's what makes up the RNC, the Republican National Committee, who sets the rules.
Is the chairman?
It's a chairman,
mm-hmm.
a national committee man, and a national committee woman. Those three people from every state and territory set the rules for the party, pick the national chairman, Rens Primus, who's elected from them, and they also become automatic delegates to the national convention. They get a vote regardless. They don't have to commit to anybody. They're the Republican version of superdelegates. Democrats have these things called superdelegates for when they're running. You probably heard a lot about them. Hillary spends a lot of time courting superdelegates. Those, for Democrats, that's a much bigger pool. That's about a third of their delegate selection, and that's mega donors. Those are the Tom Steyers of the world that fund, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for Democrat causes and campaigns. Those are people like Nancy Pelosi. You know, Paul Ryan isn't in amongst himself a delegate to the Republican National Convention, even though he's the Speaker of the party. He doesn't get an automatic appointment. Hmm. He could get his appointment from his state, and he probably will. But he doesn't get an outsized influence the way Nancy Pelosi does, or Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein. Those are super delegates because they're important to the party structure.
Interesting. And so the parties determine literally how those go. Okay, so once, do they meet? Does this national committee meet?
National committee meets, you know, pretty regularly. They have phone calls and that sort of stuff, and then they meet in person, I think, four times a year.
And they decide.
They decide policy. They decide when. Those are the folks that decide who gets to moderate debates.
Ah.
Who gets when primaries can be so your delegates are actually seated. They don't decide for the state, but they decide, well, if you pick a date before this date, before January 21, then you don't get any delegates seated. They set those other rules, and that's why, you know, the party kind of stepped in 2016 from 2012, where everything kind of crowded to the beginning. Now we moved everything back a little bit. We're no longer voting, you know, the second week in January in Iowa.
Right. Okay.
Now, can they change those rules during the process, or is once they set them at the beginning, they run with them?
For fairness, they pretty much set the rules once, and that's it.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so is it pretty representative of the country, or, I mean, have we gone through times when this whole idea got kind of seriously corrupted and had to get flushed and reset? I mean, has it always been like this from the beginning of the country?
Well, you didn't have parties in the beginning.
I mean, not at the very, you know, but...
But it's been like this since the rise of party politics. I mean, you can look back in history and guys, you know, Boss Tweed from New York... you know, the machine politics. It's been like this for quite a long time. And I'd say it's definitely softer than it has been in the past. I mean, look at some of the stuff with Teddy Roosevelt and Judd Hanna and, you know, back in the day, you know, early 1900s about party machinery moving and blocking and trying to stop some people and promoting. It's a much lighter touch today than it ever has been.
So now they decide when...
how delegates are seated.
Okay.
And then, so you get a delegate. The delegates get the nomination, help secure the nomination. That's, you know, nationwide. Every congressional district gets three delegates, no matter where you are. Those delegates then select the nominee. Then you get the official nominee. Then you go to the Electoral College, which is, again, another... representative. It's not a direct election. The winner doesn't actually win until the Electoral College shows up and votes.
Okay, we're gonna talk about that.
Okay, yeah, we got to figure that out because back to the eighth grade again when we were goofing off. I'm glad I wasn't the only one goofing off in eighth grade. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Well, I called the congressman and he said, quote, I'd like to help you, son, but you're too young to vote. Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, cause there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
I didn't remember that part of that song. Good one, Bob. All right. Back here at We the People. With Mark, our hostage, who's explaining everything that we apparently did learn in school, but don't remember.
But forgot.
Oh, my gosh.
So we got through the delegate process, or the delegate process.
Delegate process. So every congressional district gets three delegates. So then those guys go...
to the national convention. You see, you know, on TV, little bit anymore that you see on TV. This year they're going to be in July rather than in August, September. They moved them forward this year, so there's because of money. Because before, if you ran them late, you can only spend general election money in that period after you get the nomination.
Because you have different money. There's general election
and primary money. Oh. And by moving them forward, you can raise more general election money, and you have a longer period to spend it.
Interesting. So what happens if you have primary money left?
You can spend primary money in general election, but it doubles. So if you have $2,700 you can raise for the primary, you also have $2,700 you can raise for the general. It's all for the eventual election in November. But let's say you raise $5,400 the first time. you can only spend $2,700 of it. And trust me, the FEC wants to make sure you have that other $2,700. If you spend that, you might find yourself in some trouble.
So that means that they're working with a diminishing resource if they don't move that up. Okay, that makes sense. All right, so you send those guys back to the convention.
Big convention, happy 4 or 5 day party. They nominate their guy, that or gal, and most of the time, you already know what's happening ahead of time because of what's happened in the primaries. This year, maybe we know, maybe we don't. You know, who knows? Maybe Hillary gets indicted after she's already won and decides she has to drop out. You know,
dare to dream.
We can all dare to dream these things. Let's say it's within the realm of possibility. But why would they indict her before she's already won, right? If she's already won, then you can get Joe Biden. If she's already out, then you're stuck with Bernie Sanders.
Ruh-roh.
If she gets indicted in 3 weeks from now, you're pretty well stuck with Bernie Sanders, because guess what? Joe Biden hasn't qualified for an election anywhere. He collected no signatures to get on the ballot. Those were things that you had to start last year on.
So they can't change the rules?
Well, they changed them every time somebody dies or whatever. I mean, you can go to a judge and get a judge to let you get on the ballot. But it's harder.
It's awkward and
messy. Extenuating circumstances.
Awkward and messy. But, you know, it's one thing where they let them on the ballot because somebody withdraws or they die or whatever. This is somebody getting indicted. It's not like they...
But they got to get on a ballot in every state.
They got to get on the ballot in every state.
Right.
That's a heavy lift.
That is a heavy lift. Whereas Hillary has the nomination already sewed up and she gets indicted later, she can withdraw. Then all of her delegates are still the delegates, but they're now free agents.
And then can somebody...
Then they can vote for whoever they want.
And they can put Joe Biden up there and he doesn't have to...
Didn't have the baggage of running through a primary.
Interesting. Right. Okay.
So that's why there's been no decision yet.
That's why there's no panic to do that at this point. Okay.
Just a theory.
Yeah. Just saying.
We're just talking about it. Yeah. So, all right. They all go to the convention now. The three from each congressional district are casting their...
They have to vote for who their
congressional district voted for.
And according to... states can set different rules. Sometimes if your preferred candidate falls below a threshold, officially you can become a free agent by the state rules. RNC basically says if you don't vote for who you came to vote for, you're null and void, you're kicked out and replaced.
Oh. Now, do the Democrats get three from each congressional district, too? Is it the same number of people on both sides, or their party decides that?
Their party decides that. I don't work in Democrat politics, so that's one of those things I follow a little less than Republican politics.
I was just curious if it was like a rule
they
had to be the same.
They have the superdelegates, and then they have, delegates from – they have a much more complicated process.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There's coalitions. You need the Women's Coalition, the LGBT coalition. You need the various different groups.
But Republicans don't have that.
No.
It's just
show up and vote.
Figure so.
Okay, so we get to the convention. We elect a nominee. Okay, so now we have a Republican nominee. We have a Democratic nominee.
Green Party, Libertarian, all same stuff, same basic principle.
Okay.
So now
what happens between that and the general? Just everybody getting the message out, trying to get everybody retooled.
Then you start the fight. And that's where Electoral College comes in, because you need 270 Electoral College votes. And different states get different votes. California gets 55, the most of anybody.
Based on population.
Okay.
But the Electoral College is basically set up as a way of protecting small states. Because if you only cared about popular vote, you would only campaign in big cities. Why would you ever show up?
Sure.
Why show up to Ohio? There's no particularly populous big city. I mean, yeah, you got Cleveland, but it's not that big a deal. It's not that many votes compared to New York, Florida, Los Angeles, San Francisco Bay Area, even Sacramento. I mean, Sacramento is the 18th largest city in the country. So... you spend all your time in the urban centers, trying to get all the votes you could. And then whoever wins the most votes, and now if what happens if we're fighting over like 100 votes?
Well, how does that
you throw the entire country into
how does that protect the small states? I mean, if California gets 55 votes and Ohio gets 20, wouldn't they spend
like
most of their
Pennsylvania gets 20 because only some of them are in play. You know, California, given what California is going to go hard D anyway.
Right.
So you get what's called swing states, and you'll hear about this
ad
nauseum. You know, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Colorado, New Mexico.
So that's where they're going to go.
That's where they're going to go because those are states, you know, maybe throw Wisconsin in the mix this year.
Because they could go
They could go
Democrat. Okay.
And you need to get 270 votes. And based on what's solidly Republican and what's solidly Democrat, you have to campaign in those states to win 270.
Now, with this election, they're saying that a lot of, maybe not a lot, but a fair amount of Democrats are going to vote for Trump. Would that make it worth their while to come to states like California and campaign for those votes?
You're still going to spend most of your time in quote-unquote swing states. There'll be what will happen is more states go into that swing state category, and some states that used to be swing states will swing out and swing to safe columns. You always part of this is you're narrowing the field of battle.
Sure, because it's really hard to campaign in 50 states.
It's really hard, and it's really expensive.
Right.
You know, you're still going to come to California because you want the money. Right, you're going to raise money in California because California is an ATM state. You're still going to go to New York. You're still going to go to, you know, you're going to go Florida because not only are there a lot of people, but there's also a lot of votes. But you're going to make a trip probably to just about every state anyway, just as a presence or whatnot. But the big part will be spent, the most money. That's where you see the incredible amounts of campaign dollars, the commercials that run every day, all day, nonstop.
It's 50% plus one?
50%
plus one. For the electoral vote.
For the electoral college. You need 50% plus one, which is 270.
Okay.
And so a lot of people say, well, we should get rid of the electoral college.
Getting rid of the electoral college throws you into a big danger. Okay, everybody remembers Florida, or think back to Florida, 2000.
Talking about the hanging Chad.
Hanging Chad. That was one state going through craziness. Now, amplify it for 50 states, because you are now, let's say you're under the 1% threshold. There's less than 1%. And, you know, look, elections can be close. I've been on some statewide races where the difference between the winning candidate and the losing candidate was half a vote per precinct. Basically, if one person showed up in every other precinct, the Republican would have won. The constitutional conservative would have won versus a flaming lefty billionaire.
Yeah, so you're talking like 100 votes for the whole state.
For the state of California, it ended up being 13,000 votes. But don't tell me your vote doesn't count.
Yeah.
The vote counts, and that's why you have to show up. Some of it's, you know, maybe you hate the governor's candidate. Maybe you don't like your state assemblyman. Show up and vote for the rest of the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay? Because it makes a huge difference. I mean, look, we all, state of California, we got a gal now that's our attorney general running for U.S. Senate out here, Kamala Harris, gun grabber extraordinaire. You know, she barely won. And I mean barely. We're talking like one vote a precinct. And she's not there.
Mm-hmm.
She was losing on election night and came back in the end on the late count, which is basically all the votes that they hadn't got counted by the end of the election night, all the late absentees and all that stuff. It's a mess. But if you don't show up, you don't get to make the rules.
Right, right.
So the Electoral College, do they go there? Do they do this electronically?
No, they physically show up in D.C. So every candidate, the candidate, the Republican, the Democrat, Libertarian, Green Party, they select one elector, right? So you get an elector for essentially it's every member of Congress the state has plus every U.S. senator. So however many seats you have in the U.S. House plus two. So the minimum number is three. You know, Wyoming gets three. Alaska, three. Even small states get three. Then everybody else gets more, depending on how their population, how many seats and they get. So they actually named someone. So in that case, Mitt Romney, actually, he had a elector named for every single of the possible electors in every single state. And so did Barack Obama. And if you win that state, now some states apportion differently. This is one of those, you know, one of the things for California we talk about, how would you make California relevant in a presidential race? You make California relevant by doing what Republicans do in their primary and apportion by congressional district, which means if you won 15 congressional districts, you won 15 electoral votes. That's certainly a reason to show up in California.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of winner take all. Winner take all, right.
There's a couple states that have by...
Who decides if it's winner take all or if it's apportion?
State does. State election law. So your state legislature or through the initiative process.
What's the split on that?
So we're screwed.
I mean, how many are...
I think there's four states. That's just shooting off the hip. I believe it was four states that apportion versus
I think it's just Nebraska and Maine that do that, that apportion the Electoral College by percentage as opposed to winner take all.
Interesting.
All right, we're going to
come back.
Let's
too bad
we
don't do more of that. That would actually, that would make everybody more relevant. Huh. All right. More to come. Stick with us. We have a little break here. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online. Oh, don't join us online. We have to talk about some other stuff. Oh, okay. You can join us online now. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Somebody's gonna hurt someone before the night is through. Somebody's gonna come undone. Nothing we can do. Everybody wants to touch somebody. If it takes all night, everybody wants to take a little chance. Make it come out.
White House door, that's what he says he'll do. We'll all be drinking that free bubble and eating that rainbow stew. Eating rainbow stew in a silver spoon underneath that sky of blue.
Yeah, I want to know who that is.
That's Merle Haggard.
Wow. A little local song for us, Rainbow Stew. that's scary. Okay. So the Electoral College
is a winner-take-all in most states.
Mm-hmm.
And
so what if? We were talking about during the break, which always happens. We always talk about all the good stuff while no one can hear us. If in fact the states all decided for some reason somehow to go to an apportioned type of a process, that would be really good for Republicans.
Well, it would, because let's face it, we have 243 Republicans to Congress. And then we have the most governors we've ever had.
31-ish, 2-ish?
We have quite a few. We have had when Barack Obama was elected.
He's been very good for the conservative movement, hasn't he?
He has certainly energized the conservative movement. It would, especially if you apportion Electoral College based on congressional districts, then Republicans would pretty much own it for the decade.
Hmm. Interesting. And so when was the last time that changed anywhere? Like a million years ago?
Districts? Districts change every 10 years.
No, I mean whether you're apportioned or whether you're winner take all. Like when was the last time that actually switched around?
It's been a long time. So been a very long time. That's again a state decision on when they get to what they get to choose. If any state want to change it, it's either their legislature could do it,
okay,
or the people could do it by a referendum or initiative. But that would be certainly shake up the way we select president. because then it means that in those swing districts in the country, the president's going to show up, whoever it is.
Everybody's a swing district at that point, in a way. I mean,
you know, you have hard R districts, and you know, there's not a lot of point in the president showing up to Nancy Pelosi's district.
Right.
They're going to vote for a Democrat, whatever it is.
But they don't show up to California because they already know that all, you know, it's...
They get all 55 is going outside the ATM, California, basically collect money. They don't show up to California. You know, this year might be different. It depends how crazy the Republican nomination or Democrat nomination is. There's a outside possibility with this many candidates that have this much money, if they can all hang on long enough, it might not be decided by June when it gets here. We get to that weird place where you get a brokered convention.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Essentially, a brokered convention gets to be where, and I know it sounds, when you say brokered, it sounds, but that's where the delegates decide. Okay? You get in the room, and they start voting. And then they, once you drop out the people that didn't meet minimum thresholds, if you don't get 10%, you drop off the ballot.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So they keep voting. And keep voting until they
get the right number?
Until you drop off the ballot so you can get 50% plus one. This is how Abraham Lincoln became our first Republican nominee. He was everybody's second choice. Nobody came to convention with enough votes to be the nominee.
Hmm. But they know pretty much ahead of time how they're going to vote, though, don't they?
Well, they're required to because they're submitted.
Right.
But let's say nobody gets enough on the natural through the election.
Mm-hmm.
To go into the convention with 50% plus one. This is for the nomination, not the Electoral College.
Okay.
But if nobody has enough, because if the Electoral College can't select, it goes to the House of Representatives, by the way.
Yeah. I heard about that the other day. Okay, so how does that go?
If the Electoral College, if they can't determine a winner, if there's nobody gets 270 votes,
yeah,
it goes to the House of Representatives, and a majority vote wins.
Hmm.
Wow.
Well, we know how that would turn out.
That could be a snazzy game changer. Well, when was the last time that happened?
You're testing my level of history. I don't know.
I think it was in the 1800s.
Yeah, I was going to say it has happened, though, right? I heard this the other day, and I just didn't commit it
to
memory.
Well, but part of this goes back to, you know, when John Adams was elected, he was elected by the House. Okay? Previously, you didn't have a national election. You know, in the early days of the Republic, the House selected the president.
Mm-hmm.
It was an indirect election. We changed that, and we made the Electoral College as a compromise so that small states still mattered.
Mm-hmm. Because if we didn't have the Electoral College, we're
then
no longer a republic.
Then you're a direct democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when was the last time we had a brokered convention?
Well, 68 was a brokered convention for the Democrats.
Right.
Can't tell you the Republican one.
Is it considered a bad thing? I mean,
it creates intrigue.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows who's going to be the nominee. And that's where you can get wild card nominees. Some guy that could never run. You could end up with Paul Ryan being the next Republican.
Yeah.
Because then you could nominate anybody from the floor.
Oh, okay.
And
all it takes is
a majority of people voting for you.
So that's where there's a lot of politicking going on down on the floor to get those votes.
Okay, so that's how
on the floor, in the hotel room, with the cigars and the scotch.
Yeah. Exactly.
Does it come with a basement?
And a beating.
Exactly. All right, everybody out to the alley. Interesting. So it looks like a jury room.
12 Angry Men.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. So what do you think will happen?
Most likely, the same thing that normally happens. By then, we'll have
It'll figure itself out.
You know, here's what normally happens. Candidate loses. Somebody that has high expectations loses a few races, and they stop being able to raise money. Their burn rate is too high. They have to get out because they can't afford to compete anymore.
And they roll their support towards
the eventual winner. So, right.
And that pretty much seals the deal.
That pretty much seals the deal.
What'd you find?
Just a point of interest. Wikipedia says Adlai Stevenson of the 1952 Democrat Party and Thomas Dewey of the 1948 Republican Party were the most recent brokered convention presidential nominees of their respective parties. Respective parties.
Hmm.
They're not respected, of
course. Gotta love Wikipedia and Bob. Thanks, Bob.
The last winning presidential nominee produced by a brokered convention was FDR in 1932.
There you go.
So this truly is, you know, in the weeds for everybody. Nobody knows how this works.
Oh, I think that's why the Republican side of the game is so up in the air right now. There's just so many players.
Nobody has 50%.
Yep.
I mean, look, Trump's very popular. He speaks to people who are just angry. I think all of us experience that. You're angry. You're fed up with people telling you the same old PC mm-hmm. answer.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And he's excelling at that. But he's a guy that's also, a couple years ago, said that Democrats provide the best economic model. Since when has tax and spend the great economic model?
Right.
Yeah.
I think one of his best characteristics and most effective characteristics is he plays the media like a fiddle. I mean, everything he does.
Have to spend a lot of money.
They play right into his
hands. For free.
He spent very little on his campaign, and the media covers him every day.
He is a master of the media. I mean, I don't think anybody can argue that he is playing a completely different game than everybody else. You have the rest of the people running a traditional or quasi-traditional campaign structure,
right.
And he is running.
He's changing the rules.
A completely different game that changes the definition and the boundaries of where campaigns can go and can't go.
And nobody can keep up with it either. Nobody is second-guessing it. Nobody's correct on what's going to happen. It's like I was listening to somebody today, and they said that him backing out of this next debate, he may or may – you know, he's saying he's not going to go, but the smartest thing he could do now is show up. Because he would have just got the last 7 days of media for free.
Interesting. And this program will air after that, so I guess the reason we don't know isn't because we neglected to watch. It's
but
because
it just
we couldn't
seems like everything
travel.
He does, the media goes sideways on it, and then it always works out for him. So
He's great at playing them, but he's been doing this for years. He's a media figure since the late 1970s.
Yep.
He has owned the media, the Trump brand, the reality TV show. Heck, I had the Trump board game in the 1980s.
You did?
Of course.
I didn't know there was a board game.
There's a board game, which is a lot like Monopoly, but not a complete ripoff. But how do you build up Atlantic casinos and a whole bunch of
exactly
and a whole bunch of casinos?
That's funny.
Well, he's really is kind of redesigning the whole board of politics.
But going forward, could a regular candidate pull that off? See, I don't think they could. I mean, I don't know that he's necessarily blazed a trail anybody else could use.
I don't know that they get the slack that he does. I think the others would cannibalize him a little more,
mm-hmm.
But still today, we can't say today who's going to be the nominee for sure. Yeah. There's pretty much a pathway as far as, I can see it is there's a pathway for three Republicans to be the nominee. You could either have Marco Rubio, you can have Ted Cruz, or you can have Donald Trump. Everybody else at this point is kind of running.
Unless something really major happens.
Crazy things happen.
Sure.
I'll totally give you but the three with the most likely pathway. Rubio and Cruz, they have a lot of cross between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Some people really like Cruz. Some people really like Marco. It's a conservative senator. Conservative first term senator. That you can boil them down to both that.
Well, and everybody said forever that it would be Jeb Bush, just because the party would demand it. But in the system we just laid out, that's not actually possible.
Well, I think the party was demanding it, but they've got such.
You got to get everybody else to go along.
Well, but nobody else. Look, this is America. We hate dynasties.
Yes.
Okay. We're not going to put up with a third.
Right.
Okay. The voters aren't going to have it. And as much as anybody wants to say they can lead the voters by the nose, they're lying to you. Okay. The voters get to make up their mind. And no voter, and that's the same reason, I think anybody that's actually spent a lot of time thinking about it goes, say we did get into Bush versus Clinton. How do you think that's going to go for us with the rest of the non-political world.
Right.
Yeah, not. Yeah.
No dynasty.
Terrible.
And you know, it's sad, too, because the guy's totally qualified for the job, but because his last name is Bush, he's out.
And he was a pretty good governor.
Yeah,
especially in that time period. You know, he said a lot of the right things, did a lot of right things.
Bad timing.
Bad last name at this point.
Bad last name at that. Yeah, true story. All right, we're going to take one more break, and we'll be right back. Finish up top of the hour here. Talking about politics. We never do this much actual in-the-weeds politics. We always talk about issues. So we thought we'd take a little break and just talk about that kind of stuff. Hope you enjoyed it today. We'll be right back with you in a couple of minutes. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Top crime could have meet on your choice. I want to be elected. I'm Yankee Doodle Dandy in a gold Rolls Royce. Constitution, well, you know, we all want to change your head. You tell me it's the institution, well, you know, you better free your mind instead. But if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't gonna make it with anyone anyhow.
Unless, of course, you're Bernie.
Well, Hillary, she's already got the Chairman Mao outfit.
Hillary's wearing the Mao outfit, and yeah. Bernie wants to give it all away.
Yeah. The two of them.
Who would have thought?
They could take over China.
Who would have thought that would be popular? All right. So,
derail you here, but, you know,
we were talking about...
The possibility of Biden getting into the race, but it's a timing thing.
It's a timing thing. It's tough at this point to get on the ballot unless he's sued in every 50 states.
But if
57? What was the president? Oh, sorry.
It's funny. I was thinking it.
But that would be a brokered convention sort of a deal, wouldn't it?
Well, if he got on the ballot, you know, and people actually voted for him, then it wouldn't be a brokered convention because he would win the nomination through the same process as everybody else. If he didn't, if Hillary got out,
the primary.
But if Hillary got the nomination and then got out,
then it would be a brokered convention.
Then he could step in and not worry about being on the ballot anywhere. He could just go in and the delegates could elect him.
You got it.
Yeah. So I think there's a game plan there. I think he just lays low and Uncle Joe just waits until Big O drops the axe on Hillary, which I'm not totally convinced he won't do. And do it after.
There was a lot of sucking up during the last debate.
Oh, there was.
Dear
he's holding
God,
all
the
cards. The
sucking sound was gigantic.
Yeah, he could just pardon her too.
Oh
well, yeah,
yes,
he could pardon her, but I mean, as far as
he could preemptively pardon her before there was a charge.
Can you do that?
Sure, he could say, "I absolve you." You know, he's got presidential pardoning power. You don't even have to be charged. He could say, "Any past and wrongdoings of my administration are hereby deemed to be legal and good. Welcome to my kingdom."
Hear ye, hear ye. But if that happened after the primary,
don't listen to anybody behind the curtain,
and she was the nominee, and then she got out, then Biden's in.
Biden could get in. Heck. So the rumors that you hear, right?
Elizabeth Warren. What about her?
You got Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
You got Michelle Obama.
Stop it.
Although the rumor is she's going to go back to Illinois and run for United States Senate.
Well, of course, Illinois. What better state for, you know, being a senator?
But
is there any way Obama runs for a third term under that scenario if Hillary's out?
Luckily for us, that's still unconstitutional.
Yeah, but
not that it stopped him before.
Not if the Justice Department doesn't press charges, he'll run for a third term.
He goes under Satoru.
Oh, yeah. He runs as
Barry Satoru.
There you go. From Indonesia.
From Hawaii.
Oh, from Hawaii.
From
Sorry,
Hawaii.
I got it wrong.
They'll tell the Supreme Court, try and stop me.
Oh, my goodness. So it is, it's going to be very, very interesting these next few months. I mean, as sick as I think a lot of us are of all this campaigning.
Oh, I think it's going to be exciting.
I think once it gets closer to the primaries,
riveting.
It's going to be very exciting.
Well, and at the end of the day, too, don't forget. You know, people get all caught up in this presidential stuff, but what they don't realize is tons of things that affect them happen at the local level. Obviously, your city council, if you have one.
Usually those are in November.
Or your commissioners, board of supervisors, all that stuff that's really important, and those are campaigns to get involved in at your local level.
Yeah, your state assembly, state senate, U.S. Congress, all that stuff. That all happens. The primaries are all this spring, you know.
That's right. That's right. And those you can make a difference.
You make a huge difference.
Make a huge difference.
I mean, I always think about the one city council race here a few years ago, and we had moved into a different – we had moved into town.
Yeah.
We had moved into town. We could never vote in the city before. We moved into town 2 weeks before the election, actually took our ballots down to the clerk's office, had them changed for the new address, voted, and that guy won by 11 votes. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Well, don't think the grassroots – I mean, look, Ted Cruz
is – counted.
United States Senator today because of grassroots. He was not the guy that anybody thought was actually going to win from Texas. He was not
really
the hand-picked guy. The lieutenant governor of the state was running.
That was David Dewhurst was running against Cruz. Yeah, the sitting lieutenant governor.
Look at you. You are Wikipedia.
Well, he is.
Thank God. At least we have somebody here who knows this stuff. I did not know that.
I do stuff for Texas on the side. I'm a little
Oh, that's
Texas
right. You do their news
politics
and stuff. We have a cheaters in
better
here.
Better be up on their politics.
Yeah, really.
But you're right. No one expected Cruz to win that.
Not against the lieutenant governor. And in Texas, the lieutenant governor is a very strong lieutenant governor. They do a lot more stuff than, like, in California, where the lieutenant governor's basic job is to check if Jerry Brown has
still
a pulse.
Alive.
Does he have a pulse? Yeah, I'm going to go to one of the 57 boards and commissions that I'm put on this year.
Yeah, what does the lieutenant governor do? Just hangs around and waits
on,
to...
Actually, I think it's 113 boards and commissions. Sits on the UC Board of Regents.
Do you remember when Mike Curb was lieutenant governor, a Republican, when Jerry Brown was governor the first time around? He had Brown afraid to leave the state because Curb would go in and enact all this legislation when he was the...
Oh, really?
Acting governor.
Well,
I'm in charge.
Veto and sign. And,
oh, really? Oh, so he couldn't...
It's pretty funny. And turn your back on your own lieutenant governor.
That's pretty funny, actually.
That's the joy of an independent election.
Darn, that would have been fun to do.
That's funny.
Okay, so now if Bloomberg decides he wants to jump in on this presidential thing, when's his cutoff?
He's got a much later cutoff. He can wait and wait it out and see what happens with Hillary.
Yeah.
But think about this. You could have Hillary Clinton, New York, Donald Trump, New York, Michael Bloomberg, New York.
Right.
All of them with over $1 billion. Now, Bloomberg makes Trump look like a piker. Okay?
Oh, no kidding.
Really?
He's got a net worth exceeding $47 billion. He said he's willing to spend over $1 billion of his own dollars because
he's
got
Well, he has 47
it.
Of them.
You know,
I didn't realize
this
that.
Is what they mean by New York values.
New York values, yeah. But at the same point in time, you know, Hillary's going to have and raise, although we talked about burn rate earlier. So in her last financial report coming up, mid-November, so she'd raised $145 million and spent it all.
Mm-hmm.
She had $700,000 cash on hand last November, which, you know, talk about burn rate.
Yeah, no kidding. Ouch. Of course, with those other two guys, that's chump change. They got that in the cushions of their jet.
Yeah, no fooling. I had no idea. I didn't know he was worth that much.
I knew Bloomberg was wealthy, but I didn't think he was.
But think about
more wealthy,
you know,
than
this
Trump.
Is anti-gun, anti-soda Bloomberg.
Oh, yeah, that would be.
You know,
yeah,
basically the
soda
guy.
Soda ban. Oh, my God. Can you imagine that at the federal level?
Keep your hands off my Pepsi.
Exactly.
Pratt out of my cold, dead fingers.
And they would be cold for multiple reasons.
That's right. And sweaty. Oh, I think there's some twists and turns coming. I really do. And I think it all kind of pivots on Hillary, what's going to happen there.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, at the same point in time, Bloomberg gets in, you pretty much assure a Republican go, because no Republican is going to vote for Bloomberg. Bloomberg was elected as a Republican, switched to independent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then went all socialist.
And then turned left.
Yeah, and then, drank the Kool-Aid.
Big time. Wow. Huh. Well, this is going to be kind of fun.
It's going to be a bloody mess coming
up. Yes,
it
is.
I think it's going to be, yeah.
It totally
enjoy
is.
It. Remember to vote.
Exactly.
Any bets on whether Trump's going to show up at the debate?
Since this will air afterward, and we're either going to look really smart or really stupid.
I don't think he shows up.
Yeah, I don't think he shows up either.
I don't think he does either.
All right, it's 3-0. So bottom line is make sure you're registered to vote. That would be imperative.
And show up, and make sure it does count.
And make sure you're registered to vote where you live now in case you moved or something, so get cracking on that. And if you like somebody who's running or you want to learn about it, volunteer for their campaign. You'll learn all about them. It's a great way to learn about the candidates.
Vote early and often.
That too.
That often thing will send you to jail.
Only if they catch you. Oh, my gosh. So right. We'll be back next week with something else.
On.
I forget what we're doing, but it'll be fun. You'll like it.
Yeah.
So join us online and send this show to a friend, especially if they don't know what's going on. This is smarting them up or make them feel totally dopey like the rest of us. WeThePeopleRadio.us. See you next week.